What up, folks? It's O'Shea Davis with the Working Wonder Podcast Show. Today I have my POI, person of interest from my previous season, known as Jackie Davis, my wife, who is a speech pathologist, graduated from TU with her master's degree. And today we will discuss three elements or ideas that regard parents, children, and people as a whole. With that being said, this podcast shouldn't be too long, but we have a lot of things to discuss from our previous episode. If you recall listening to it, if you have not, you should go back to season one and take a look at it. It's about COVID. It's about screen time and understanding how that can possibly hinder the development of your child if it is exposed too often and too early. Let's jump right into it. So first of all, baby, we got to talk about an important subject that we've talked about on several of occasions regarding just what you deal with at your job, but just in general, and that is behavior modification or behavior modeling. All right. So explain to our audience what behavior modeling is and what does that mean?
It's essentially just trying to redirect your child's negative behaviors and hopefully develop some more positive habits in your child. So if you want them to either start doing something more or to stop doing something, kind of learning how to model that behavior to them, how to redirect, and basically the best way to get them to do what you want to do, essentially.
So in other words, you're almost just trying to get them to mimic what you do? Is that essentially what behavior modeling is? Or is it more you teaching them how to create certain behaviors?
It's more so teaching them how to do certain behaviors and kind of redirecting their behaviors away from the negative behavior that you want them to stop doing and redirecting it to something more positive.
Okay, I got you. So in other words, we're trying to correct the negative behavior by replacing it with a positive behavior.
Yes.
So what example would you give for that? I guess the one that I hear you discuss and I think a lot of parents probably deal with is children who like to hit. Mm-hmm. I know that's a fairly common one. So what do you do about that? A child who just likes to swing and hit and kick and think it's funny. How do you correct that behavior or redirect that behavior?
One of the main things that I tell my parents and the families that I work with who deal with negative behaviors like that is we try to lure them away from saying the word no. Because a lot of times we tell our kids no so much that they become desensitized to that. And it also can have an adverse effect where the child will start saying no to you when they don't want to do something. Because they've learned that behavior of, oh, mom tells me no when I'm doing something that she doesn't like. I'm going to tell mom no when she's doing something that I don't like, or when she's telling me to do something that I don't want to do, I can say no. And so there's nothing wrong with having no in your vocabulary because at some point you're going to have to tell them no to something. Mm-hmm. But it's just a matter of not overusing it. And one of the main strategies that I like to use when trying to redirect negative behaviors is instead of telling them no, instead of telling them stop or no or what not to do, you tell them what they should be doing instead. So for example, a kid who likes to jump on the couch or likes to crawl on things, instead of constantly saying, no, don't do that, stop. Well, they feel like crawling in that moment. They feel like jumping on something in that moment. So if you just tell them to stop doing it, they're going to be like, well, I don't want to stop doing it because I like jumping on this couch right now. So instead, you want to give them something else to do. Instead of saying no or stop jumping on the couch, say feet on the floor. That way, if you don't mind them jumping on the floor, they can jump on the floor, just not on the couch. I had one kiddo who had a problem with crawling on the couch so much, and he liked to, crawl all over everything, jump up and down, And I was telling the parent that she should redirect that behavior to one of the little slide toys that they have. They have this indoor slide that has a ladder, and he can climb up it and slide down. And I was saying, maybe you should try when he's jumping on the couch and you say, no, get down, stop doing that. Instead, bring his slide toy in the front room and say, okay, feet on the ground, slide on this. That way he still has a way to get his energy out in a non-disruptive way. Same thing with hitting. Instead of saying don't hit or stop hitting, try saying, using language like, okay, use nice hands, be nice, use soft hands, instead of just telling them to stop that behavior without giving them another behavior to reinforce it with, try to give them that behavior to reinforce it with up front. And I've seen this work really well with some kiddos who have issues with hitting. I have one kid in mind that she liked to hit her siblings when she got angry. And even just for fun, she thought it was cute and funny. And I was, you know, telling the parent, okay, try using language like use nice hands, use soft hands, you know, be nice, and reinforcing it with that. And eventually she got to the point where she would stop herself. The mom told me that one time she saw her raise her hand like she was going to hit, and then she caught herself and then put it down. And so she learned to regulate her own behaviors from that. And so these things, you know, have been proven to work. The positive reinforcement versus the negative reinforcement of saying stop, don't. Giving them something else to do in its place. Somewhere else to redirect that energy.
I love that. And that brings me to my second question, which we're all familiar with, which is whooping. When a person is, or a child, or even a teenager, in which some cases the direction of the parent is to not reward per se, but give consequences out for the negative action based on some form of physical reinforcement. Given that that's very common today, and I'm sure that almost everyone watching this podcast knows someone or probably was that person who grew up with whoopings being a normal thing, what is the consequences or the repercussions of parents to this day who could be utilizing whoopings on children who are under the age of, say, 3 or 2?
So there has been countless studies, study after study, that has shown that corporal punishment like that, whooping, spankings, is the least effective form of punishment and behavior modification in children for several reasons. For one, children model what you do. They imitate what you do, and that's how they learn. Because for the first several years of life, you know, they don't know anything. All they know is what they see. And so it is therefore your job to teach them what to do and, you know, how to deal with their emotions, how to deal with certain things. And so if you, an authority figure, the person who they are modeling everything after, if you show that, okay, when you do something I don't like, I'm going to hit you. Or when you're not listening to me, I'm going to hit you as a punishment. In your mind, you may be thinking, okay, I'm doing this to teach you a lesson. I'm doing this for safety reasons. I hear a lot of the reasons of, you know, well, they need to know that if it's a dangerous situation, painful things can happen. And that is true, but that is not the way to teach that necessarily, especially when you're a child who's below the age of 3. You're not going to go through that thought process. You're not going to see it as a lesson. As a parent, you have a fully developed brain. You know, you're able to rationalize that and say, okay, I'm doing this to teach you a lesson for X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. To a 2-year-old brain, all they see is my mommy is hurting me. Mm-hmm. A parent who I love and trust and who I model everything after is hurting me. They don't get that rationalization. And if your point is to make them rationalize that as well. That's just simply not going to happen. They're not going to understand that. And so they're going to either, you know, resent you for that, or they're going to see, okay, this is how I handle things when somebody does something that I don't like, just like mommy does with me or daddy does with me, I'm going to hit them or I'm going to do this because that's what they're being demonstrated.
And that brings me right into our very next idea, because you hit the nail on the head with everything, is emotional regulation. Oh my gosh. This is something that you see not just in children, but in adults and teenagers and in the elderly population, because I know you work with them as well, but how we have moments of frustration and we just exert ourselves in those moments in ways that we shouldn't, and how detrimental that is to the child observing you. And I think that we try to justify our anger and our frustration as in, oh, this is just how I respond to things, or I got an anger management issue. But I do believe you're passing these things on to your children. You're demonstrating this is how you do things. So when they go to school and they act out because that's what they see you do when you're upset with your mom or upset with them, then it blows back on you and you go, you shouldn't do that. But little do you know, they see you do it all the time. So goes into one of my most, I would say my most dislike ideas of all time is do as I say and not as I do. So giving that to you and handing that over is discussing the idea of emotional regulation. So how do you see that being involved in the way you teach your parents, in the way you teach your children, for those who have temper tantrums? And not just necessarily hitting or anything, but just fall out and act out when they don't get their way, or those who just get angry, or those who get really emotional in minor situations. How do you help your parents when it comes to regulating those emotions with children?
I like to utilize timeout, but not in the way that people think timeout should be. A lot of people have the perception that timeout is a punishment, is a, okay, I'm mad at you, so go in this corner, you can't do anything. Timeout honestly should be used for an opportunity for the child to collect their emotions and give them an out. So what I mean by that is, let's say you have a 2.5-year-old or a 2-year-old who's, you know, throwing a tantrum, is angry for whatever reason because you told them to do something, or, you know, whatever reason toddlers get angry. They, once again, they don't understand much at this age. They don't understand how to regulate their own emotions. We are always seeing things from an adult perspective because we're adults. And so to us, we're like, why are you getting mad over this little thing? Get yourself together. I told you to stop crying, stop crying, stop being mad, you know, whatever the case may be. But we have to remember, this is a 2.5-year-old. They don't know how to control their emotions yet. As adults, some of us still don't know how to do that, but you know, at this point we should know how to control our emotions, but we still, if you feel angry, you're going to just feel angry. We just know how to control how we respond to that emotion. If we, you know, are in a situation where we get angry or mad or sad, we don't just automatically bust out in tears or automatically punch somebody. You know, we feel that, but we know how to calm ourselves. A 2.5-year-old has not learned that yet. They feel it. They're going to act it when they feel it. They're going to cry when they feel sad immediately. They're going to, you know, yell when they get angry. They're going to try to throw a fit when they feel those emotions, because they haven't developed that skill of, okay, recognizing that you have the emotion, but expressing it in an appropriate way. They just don't have that skill developed yet. And so it is our responsibility to teach them that. And that's where timeout comes into play. It's supposed to be a safe space for a child to just collect themselves. It's supposed to be used as more of a, okay, I see you're upset right now. Let's take, you know, a couple of minutes. Let's go in this corner and let's breathe. I've seen that work in a lot of different situations where you just teach a child to just breathe and calm themselves. Like, okay, let's take some deep breaths in, you know, and teach them how to just sort of control that. And then once they get into a space where they've calmed down, that's when the door opens for communication. You can, you know, sit your child down and at whatever level you think they're able to understand, just try to talk to them and say, are you sad? You know, around that age, you know, 2 to 3 is a really good time to start working on recognizing emotions. When they act out a certain way, okay, you seem sad. Why are you sad? Let's talk about that. You seem mad. You tried to hit your brother. Why are you mad? Let's talk about that. Why are you frustrated? Why are you upset? Work on helping them identify their emotions because they probably don't have the language to put a word to it yet. But that's a perfect age to start working on some of that emotional identifying emotions, and just try to have open, honest communication with them because they're people. You know, they have the same emotions that we do. Like I said, they just don't know how to regulate that yet. And that's where our job as parents and adults would be, to try to teach them to identify their emotions and how to regulate it appropriately.
I love that concept of timeout. I think that goes back into what you mentioned is breathing and how we all need to sometimes take a time out when we're frustrated or we're upset, or even for early parents who have children who will cry all the time and they get exhausted by the crying and the frustration of multiple children. Sometimes you just got to step away, breathe, and recover. And in instances where the only person who's upset is you, it may not be a bad idea to have some self-talk and communicate with yourself and say, look, you're frustrated because of this. It'll be okay. Just like you said with parents communicating with their children, we are not going to listen to each other in any kind of heightened emotional state. It's not going to go over well because we're so into our own feelings that we can't possibly get the ideas through and communicate it thoroughly enough. Hence why you say, take a time out. Give them time to recover and breathe, throw their little fit, get it out of the way, and then let's talk about it. Because then they are now more aware of it. So next time they try to throw a fit for that reason, they go, wait, oh, that's why I'm doing it. Because they had a conversation with you about it. Would you agree with that?
Yes. And I have one family in particular that I work with who demonstrates this beautifully. The child who I work with is about 2 and some months. And she, you know, the mother was telling me that she's started to try to reinforce the child's, you know, emotions and anger with words. She's been trying to redirect how he feels by, like we said, identifying and redirecting that elsewhere. And she was telling me how whenever he gets mad at his brother, you know, and he starts to either go to hit or starts to yell or scream, you know, she stops him and says, say this instead. Say, no, Bubba, or go away, Bubba, or, you know, something along those lines. And that's also teaching the child to advocate for themselves, you know, because if another child is bothering them, you know, they should be able to say, hey, this is bothering me, stop. Instead of yelling or hitting or resorting to something that could be more violent, kind of learning how to say that, learning how to talk that out versus, doing something more disruptive. And that has worked really well for this family. And also with the timeout concept, placing a timer or, you know, having the child see something visual to say, okay, you know, you're throwing a fit right now. You're really upset. Let's take some time out. Let's go in this corner. Let's breathe. I'm going to set this timer for 5 minutes. So until this, you know, goes off, we're going to sit here and just breathe and calm down. And this particular mother said she used this and it's helped out a lot, even to the point where the child has been able to say, oh, I'm all better, And he'll say, "All better now," or, you know, and I thought that was the cutest thing when she told me that. But he was able to, you know, verbalize to her, okay, I've calmed myself down. And so that's definitely a useful strategy to use just to help children have self-awareness.
So it sounds like overall these parental techniques really work. And it's just about being patient and applying them consistently and not realizing that teaching them once or twice all of a sudden is going to work perfectly. Because just like anything, you got to create a habit out of it. That goes right into my very last point of this podcast, which is understanding habit and how what we do every day and what we do consistently shapes our actions, our behaviors, our emotions, and how we consider other people in our lives. In this case, being a parent, you got to be very considerate of your child, how they act, how they feel, and it teaches you how to be selfless. So, though we're not parents yet, but it sounds like from what you're learning and what I'm learning from you, how important that is. So, just pulling it back a little bit, going back to what I was saying, understanding habits. So, have you expressed that in any of your families or with your kiddos as far as, hey, you got to do this often. You got to teach this every day.
Yes, that is one of the main things I tell my parents is consistency is absolutely key. I was actually just telling one of my families earlier today this, that, you know, to build a habit out of something, you have to, of course, use it consistently. And children are creatures of habit. They like structure, especially at this age. They like a routine. You wake up at a certain time, you give them breakfast at a certain time, and then nap time is usually around the same time every day. So is bedtime. So is mealtime. You know, they like that and they thrive on that, having that structure every day. And so when you make something a part of that routine, that's when you're going to see some changes in them. That's when you're going to see differences. And like you said, it's not just I'm going to use this strategy once. Oh, it didn't work. That means it doesn't work. You have to make it a part of your daily routine. Even, you know, kind of taking a slight turn, even just with language development, studies have shown that even typically developing children who, you know, don't have a language delay, they have to hear a word upwards of 100 times before they're able to imitate it.
Wow.
And when you have a delay on top of that, sometimes that number is almost doubled.
Wow.
And so you have to hear things constantly, you know, practice things constantly, be exposed to it constantly before you're able to recognize that as, oh, this is a part of my routine. I'm going to do this. And so I always emphasize that to my families that please don't use these strategies once and say it doesn't work. I'm going to stop using them. It takes time. It takes consistency. And I literally cannot stress that enough. It's something that needs to happen every time this happens. I'm going to do this and I am going to make that a part of my child's routine. I am going to make that a daily occurrence. I am going to make that a habit. I'm going to be consistent with this strategy and I'm going to use it, you know, whenever they demonstrate this behavior. And it does take time. It takes time for the child to catch on to what you're doing, especially if you've been doing something else for so long and you're trying to redirect to, you know, developing a new habit. Your child isn't going to catch on as quickly as you did. They're going to take time before they're like, okay, so this is how we're doing things now. That takes time.
In other words, we're overcoming old habits to create new ones by being consistent and being disciplined about what we're trying to accomplish. So would it be a great thing for parents to set goals? And correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe as a speech pathologist, you set goals all the time for your kiddos and your families, correct?
Yes. As a speech pathologist, I have to write measurable goals. That's the only way to measure if my clients are making progress or not. And so a lot of times when I write my goals, I write them in a way that is measurable and tangible. So it's not just a general, oh, your child's going to improve behavior. It's a, your child will not demonstrate this negative behavior within a week's time span using these specific strategies. So we kind of have to break it down into something that is measurable. And so goals are 100% a part of the job. It's a part of creating these habits and using these strategies. We definitely want to make something that's measurable, but also attainable. You know, if a child is not saying any words and they're 2 years old and they have no words yet, I'm not going to create a goal that says, oh, a child will be using 3-word sentences on a regular basis. Like, we want to slowly build that up. I might make a goal saying, okay, a child will use 10 words a day for, you know, X amount of days in a row using these specific strategies. And so goal setting is definitely an important part of the job and a part of using, you know, these strategies.
Well, there you have it, folks. My very intelligent wife, a speech pathologist, graduated once again with her master's degree, University of Tulsa, in which we speak today about things regarding 1, behavior modeling, 2, emotional regulation, and 3, understanding habits. So with those 3 things in mind, but for those to be accomplishable, we have to set goals. We can't sit here and hope that these things just fix themselves upon 1 therapy session or 1 week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks. It takes consistent effort and practice to accomplish these things, especially as a parent, especially as an adult. These are things that we can all utilize, not just for children, for everybody. So thank you again for tuning in to the Work and Wonder podcast show with my lovely wife, Jackie Davis. And we are out. See you later. Peace.